This is the More Than Right podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lopez. Harvard University's embattled president, Claudine Gay, has resigned. This is understandable considering she's responsible for losing the university $1 billion in alumni donations. The financial hit resulted from her refusal to say whether student calls for the genocide of Jews violated Harvard's code of conduct. Gay notoriously said the answer depended on the context, implying Harvard's code would only manifest the minute the genocide commenced. The anti-Semitism expressed by Gay and her two fellow university presidents in testimony to Congress generated outrage outside the ethnic and racial hate factories that are today's universities. As a for instance, the organization called Students for Fair Admissions could not have known their lawsuit against prestigious Harvard's racial preference policies would lead to a landmark U.S. Supreme Court ruling declaring affirmative action unconstitutional. In his concurring opinion, Associate Justice Clarence Thomas, who is black, wrote, quote, "In the wake of the Civil War, the country focused its attention on restoring the Union and establishing the legal status of newly freed slaves. The Constitution was amended to abolish slavery and proclaim that all persons born in the United States are citizens entitled to the privileges and immunities of citizenship and the equal protection of the laws. Because of that second founding, our Constitution is colorblind and neither knows nor tolerates classes among citizens." Unquote. Of late, there has been a move away from America's foundational creed of equality in favor of divisive identity politics, where grievance and racial separation are seen as positives and enthusiastically encouraged. Getting back to Claudine Gay, the walls began to close in around her when it came to light she engaged in plagiarism. She included the scholastic work of others in her own very thin collection of academic writings. According to the Washington Free Beacon, Gay, quote, "plagiarized numerous academics over the course of her academic career, at times airlifting entire paragraphs and claiming them as her own," unquote. According to Harvard University's own conduct guide, plagiarism is defined as, quote, "When you fail to cite your sources or when you cite them inadequately, you are plagiarizing, which is taken extremely seriously at Harvard. Plagiarism is defined as the act of either intentionally or unintentionally submitting work that was written by someone else," unquote. And so, the university tasked the fellows of Harvard College to investigate Gay's academic writings. In a written statement, Harvard's fellows found Gay guilty of, quote, "a few instances of inadequate citation," unquote, but, quote, "found no violation of Harvard standards for research misconduct," unquote. Clearly, there's a double standard here. So what ominous principle is at play? Among the victims of Gay's plagiarism is Dr. Carol Swain, formerly of Vanderbilt University, where she taught law and political science. Swain is also black. In an op-ed appearing in the Wall Street Journal, Swain wrote, quote, "Harvard can't condemn Miss Gay because she is the product of an elite system that holds minorities of high pedigree to a lower standard. This harms academia as a whole, and it demeans Americans of all races who had to work for everything they earned," unquote. In an interview with the news outlet The National Desk, Swain said of Harvard's President Gay,
"Her whole research program seems to have been derivative of my prize-winning book. She cites me in her bibliography, but she doesn't engage the argument. Someone reading her papers would never know that the research questions she pursued, how she set up her research, that all of that was motivated from what was the seminal work on minority representation. And for me personally, I would say that she has cheated me out of a lot of citations And so now they have themselves in a conundrum where they're trying to redefine what is plagiarism. I believe they're doing this because they don't want to fire their first ever Black president, someone who was clearly a DEI appointee.
DEI stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. In other words, Dr. Swain is saying Harvard's plagiarizing former president is an affirmative action hire. Swain contends Gay's academic qualifications are suspect due to her clear plagiarism, but also suggests Harvard's refusal to outright fire Gay is another condemnation of affirmative action and diversity's poisonous low standards. But those low standards have advocates, like former President Barack Obama. The New York Post reports Obama, quote, privately urged the university to let Gay remain as president after she said calls for the genocide of Jews may be permissible, depending on the context, unquote. Back in 2020, President Gay engaged in poisonous diversity by commissioning a task force on visual culture and signage in response to the death of George Floyd. According to the student newspaper, the Harvard Crimson, the task force issued a report recommending a change to campus spaces which called for, quote, redecoration of walls of Annenberg, the freshman dining hall, which currently displays 23 portraits, of which none include women, and all but three depict white men, unquote. The article did not describe the accomplishments of the disparaged white men who graced the walls of Annenberg Hall. And that's the point. It's race and gender, not accomplishments, that matter. And that's why Harvard refused to fire Claudine Gay, despite her scholastic indiscretions and lack of accomplishments. Gay was the right race and gender. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, you see, form the woke equivalent of old South Africa's apartheid system. Apartheid is the Afrikaans word for separateness. It describes the South African racial segregation laws that began in the late 1940s and included what became petty apartheid, or the segregation of public facilities like drinking fountains and beaches. The pettiness of this segregation included posting signs outside Black townships that read, "Caution, beware of natives." In his 1963 letter from a Birmingham jail, civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King wrote, quote, "All segregation statutes are unjust because segregation distorts the soul and damages the personality. It gives the segregator a false sense of superiority and the segregated a false sense of inferiority." Segregation, to use the terminology of the Jewish philosopher Martin Buber, substitutes an I-it relationship for an I-thou relationship and ends up relegating persons to the status of things, unquote. Yes, petty things, like pigmentation and gender. Remember the commission launched by Gay to disparage Harvard's, quote, spaces whose visual culture is dominated by homogenous portraiture of white men, unquote? She had no qualms dehumanizing achievers of the past to prop up sad, anti-Semitic, plagiarizing, underachieving racists of the present, like, well, her. Former slave Booker T. Washington wrote, "It is not possible for one man to hold another man down in the ditch without staying down there with him." It's high time we stop assuming grievance mongers like Claudine Gray have the moral high ground. Instead, let's judge them, as Martin Luther King advised, by the content of their character, or lack thereof. only recently did it become public knowledge that a Tesla Motor Company assembly line robot assaulted an employee in 2021. This mechanical manhandling left the employee bruised and bleeding, but alive. More recently, an unlucky employee at a South Korean vegetable packing plant was crushed to death by a mindless automaton. In Silicon Valley, a 300-pound mall security robot steamrolled over a toddler. The child was not seriously hurt. Meanwhile, the New York Times announced it is suing OpenAI and Microsoft for training their version of artificial intelligence to manufacture news, just like the living and mindless automatons at the New York Times. According to the lawsuit, OpenAI's robotic tools, quote, can generate output that recites Times content verbatim, closely summarizes it, and mimics its expressive style, as demonstrated by scores of examples. These tools also wrongly attribute false information to the Times, unquote. In other words, OpenAI is so insightful and intelligent, it knows the New York Times' tendency to make things up. The Times' coverage of the Trump-Russia collusion controversy comes to mind. The newspaper was awarded a Pulitzer Prize for reporting what was ultimately proved to be a hoax. That the New York Times thinks Microsoft's AI killer robots are after them is understandable. Nearly a year ago, their technology columnist Kevin Roos wrote he was, quote, deeply unsettled and even frightened by this AI's emergent abilities, unquote. Roos observed he did not believe AI's biggest threat was its, quote, propensity for factual errors, unquote. Instead, he worried, quote, the technology will learn how to influence human users, sometimes persuading them to act in destructive and harmful ways, and perhaps eventually grow capable of carrying out its own dangerous acts, unquote. It didn't help matters when the AI expressed love for Roos and tried convincing him he was unhappy in his marriage and should leave his wife. Tech journalist Francisco Marconi, who's written for the Wall Street Journal and the Associated Press, told Reuters, quote, AI should not only be seen as a tool to generate more content, but also to help us filter it. Some experts predict that by 2026, 90% of online content could be machine-generated. This marks an inflection point where we now must focus on building machines that filter out noise, distinguish fact from fiction, and highlight what is significant, unquote. And that's what really frightens the New York Times. The nation's so-called newspaper of record fears its journalists will be replaced by love-starved AI, like it's already replacing minimum-wage McDonald's restaurant servers. That's because, as Marconi observed above, tomorrow's killer robots will be far more efficient at content moderation, aka censorship, than big tech and the lying scribblers at the New York Times. Why else would totalitarian China be the world's top investor in artificial intelligence? When you control the narrative, you control the population. And the AI of the future will crush truth and freedom the way it did that poor South Korean factory worker. That concludes this edition of the More Than Right podcast. If you feel so inclined, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, this is Steve Lopez.